You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Tuesday, June 1st, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe to this mother clucker so you get it once it goes live. I can't believe in 3 months from today, we will be breaking down college football and we will be even closer to week one in the NFL. Where does the time go? When you actually think about the sports betting calendar, I think we've been sort of helped a little bit by the delay of the NBA and the NHL seasons, because now we're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs dragging us through the month of June and into early to mid-July. And then we only have to deal with baseball only for about 6 weeks as far as the day-to-day stuff goes. So I'm very excited about that. Also very exciting to see what the city of Boston is like during a big playoff game. Went out with a crew Saturday, game one, Bruins and Islanders. My spot, Dirty Nellies in the North End, up for fucking grabs. I actually said if the Bruins scored first, the roof would explode. Because you have to understand the dynamics of the Boston bar scene. Moved here in January of 2021, and the bars at that point were at 25% capacity. Now you have to remember, it's cold, middle of winter, and the virus at that point is still extremely serious. Fast forward to this past weekend, there were people making out, everybody, guys and girls, everybody making out. Swabbing spit, drinking shots, hanging out, arms around each other. City's alive. And I think a lot of you as sports bettors, you thrive in that environment. Being out with your buddies, talking shit to people you don't know, and then having drinks after the game. I was actually following last night. Barstool had a tremendous watch party, essentially, for Barstool Sportsbook. You had Borelli's in Long Island with about 100 Islanders fans, and then you had 3 Bruins fans that were all staffers at Barstool. And they're just going at it back and forth. But one of my favorite parts about betting on sports and watching live sports, the reactions that we have with each other watching in a public setting. And life as we know it is going back to normal. Met a couple listeners on Saturday. It's a great time. Bruins win the game pretty handily, score 5 goals, win 5-2. And of course, you're humbled 2 days later as a puck gets deflected off a teammate's skate and Casey Cizikas 1-0 all the way down the ice to even up the series 1-0. That's why we gamble, and that's why we do what we do. We will talk to John Dostremski coming up on Chicken Dinner. He is the host of New York, New York on The Ringer and Spotify. He's under the Bill Simmons tree now, and Simmons has been very progressive for a long time about sports betting and the future of sports betting. So it's a nice marriage there with JJ and the guys over at The Ringer. He hosted for a long time at The Fan in New York City, legendary sports radio station, WFAN. But he's been pulled away with the promise of a better platform and better content. And JJ has plenty of thoughts on the Yankees, on the Jets and Giants. Who's going to win the AL East? Are the New York Giants going to make the playoffs? We'll find out. Hell of a run for us at Chicken X Dinner. 9-2 in our last 11. Of course, the final game, the last result, is a loser. Had the Bruins and the Islanders under 5. Final score, 4-3 in overtime. I thought the game should have been 1-1 with 10 minutes to go. 2 of the Islanders' goals went off of a Bruins player, whether it be skate or stick. Weird game. I don't hate the play. I don't love the result, but I don't hate the play. And I find it very strange that you look at what the odds makers have done again. They're giving you the free space for game 3. Total opens 5 for game 1. 5-2 Bs. Got away late. Bruins scored a bunch late. Okay. Bookmaker says, you know what? Let's hang 5 again for game 2. Okay. 5 over minus 30. The game was 1-0 after 1 last night, and the Isles got 3 in the second. You're like, oh, well, this one's not going to go under 5 because you're going to push 5. You're not going under 5, 3-1 after 2. But why are the bookmakers, who are never in a rush to dole out free money, after 5-2 in game 1 and 4-3 in game 2, why are they hanging a 5 again in game 3? Now, I know many bettors who bet the over in game 1, probably bet the over in game 2, and now they're going to load up again on game 3. I don't think the books are in the business of giving you a free space. I'm not going to bite the bait again because I did it in game 2. I thought, well, the books are daring you to take the over. Here you go. Take it. We'll give you over 5. We'll let you lay 130 or 125. Go ahead. Have at it, Haas. And that's 2 in a row. I'm a little surprised by how bullish they are with the game 3 total. You could easily make this thing 5.5. Easily. Sharp guys will hammer under 5.5, but the public is going to keep betting and parlaying over 5 or 5.5. So I think that's fascinating. The origination of the number still at 5. And the lack of movement. I got the board up right here. 5 over 25 at Westgate. 5 over 25 at South Point. 5 over 25 William Hill. 5 over 24 Pinnacle. 5 over 21 Bet Online. That's very cheap to go over 5 in a series where both games have already scored 7-7. I don't understand it. And I'm a little bit jaded because I already bit the bait on game 2 going under. I think under was the right side, but it was the wrong result. Story of the day in sports betting, though, we go to the NBA. I have never seen a series price this drastic and this volatile from a game-to-game standpoint. Lakers and Suns. I've never seen anything like this. Remember, when the Lakers opened up, they were minus 300 at William Hill. 300 to win 100. That number got chopped in half. Down to minus 150, minus 160 before game 1. And we talked about picking the Suns in game 1 and then jumping on the Lakers for the series after game 1. After game 1, that price is minus 110 each way. Lakers win game 2, it goes to minus 350. Lakers win game 3, it goes to minus 900 before game 4. So from minus 110 to minus 350 to minus 900. What happens game 4? Well, Phoenix wins game 4, but most importantly for the price, Anthony Davis leaves the game, groin injury. When will he return? Nobody knows. I see him listed questionable, doubtful. I don't think he plays game 5, and I think that's built into the number. Suns open 4.5, bet up to 5.5, and now we're sort of back to the middle at 5. The price at FoxBet this morning, Suns minus 175. After one game, the Lakers go from minus 900 to plus 145, give or take. The shifts in the price are jaw-dropping. I was talking with our buddy Dave Sherapin for a story for Fox, and he said, I don't remember anything like this after 4 games in any series in any sport. And like I said, the volatility is insane. You don't see price moves like this. And I think the anatomy of the game 5 number is the book sort of going on the defense. You could have opened at 2.5, 3.5, but they opened at 4.5 because they're playing defense because I think they think Davis isn't playing. Or he's nowhere near 100%, which we already know. Either way, LeBron has to go nuclear tonight. Has to. With or without Davis. No more passing out of the post when Cameron Payne is guarding you on the block. No more driving kicks to Alex Caruso in the corner so he could launch a three-pointer off the backboard from the side. He has to be the best player in the world, or the Lakers are not going to advance, period. And you see what the books have done. Game 1, game 2, LeBron's point prop, 24.5. Look at the price tonight. 27.5 over minus 140. 27.5 over minus 150. Get bent. Thanks, but no thanks. He could score 30. He could score 35. But I'm not paying a three-point tax and going from minus 20 to minus 50. I just can't wrap my head around this series price. When have you ever seen a team go from minus 900 to plus 140 after one game? It almost feels like the sports books are guessing. And I'll give them credit. They have to balance a lot of shit here. In one corner, LeBron is 14-0 in the first round. In the other corner, Anthony Davis may not play again. In the other corner, Phoenix has home court. And they're going to be a five-point favorite in Game 5 and at least a three-point favorite in Game 7. That's a lot to balance for a book. But it's almost like they're just going to throw a price up, take some bets, and go from there. It's a weird roundabout way, but I almost feel like the Suns have value now in the series. I'm not going to get down, but I love the Lakers after game one at minus 110 to win the series. In some way, the Sun series price, minus 170, feels pretty cheap considering all that's going on with the extra home game and Anthony Davis in and out of the lineup. Can't stay on the floor. Just take two series. Take Lakers Suns and take Clippers Mavericks. They are identical situations as far as the series and the location of Game 7. It's almost the exact same situation. Clippers and Mavericks are tied 2-2. Clippers have home court. You can find the Clippers to win this series as high as minus 450 in the market. 450 to win 100. Suns and Lakers tied 2-2. Seventh game in Arizona. Suns minus 170. So LeBron is worth over $2 to a series price? When you compare those two side to side, that's sort of what I'm computing. I'm going to bite the bait, though, tonight. I'm going to take Lakers plus 5.5. Let's remember, the Suns were minus 2 at home in Game 1 and plus 1.5 in Game 2. Davis means a lot. He's very valuable. Both ends of the floor, clutch, amazing talent. But is he really worth 6 to 7 points from plus 1.5 on the Suns to minus 5.5 on the Suns? And, of course, they're going to rule him out probably tonight, and then the line will go to 6, and then the Sharpies will hit 6 back down to 5.5 and 5. I think anything over 5 is good. There are some 5.5s right now in the market, and I like it quite a bit. I think LeBron keeps it close, and I think the series is still going to go the way of the Lakers. But I wanted to respond to a couple messages, and I tweeted this out already on my end, getting a lot of messages about, you know, betting the Lakers now, doubling down on LeBron at plus 130 or plus 135. If I'm you, I consider this option. Rather than bet a unit on plus 130, obviously you can afford to bet a unit. You bet a unit all the time. I don't care what your unit is, just make it a unit. Could be 20, could be 100, could be 500. If it's a unit, it's not a big deal. Rather than betting that unit on plus 135, 140, whatever, think about the Lakers in 6 and the Lakers in 7. Here's why. Lakers to win the series in 6, plus 320. Lakers to win the series in 7, plus 350. But you maximize your money if, in fact, the Lakers win the series. So it's worth the risk, in my opinion, if you like the Lakers to win the series. If they don't win the series, that bet at plus 130 is going to lose you a unit. If they don't win the series, those two bets at a unit, you're going to be down 2 units. You lose an extra unit. But if the Lakers win in either fashion, 6 or 7, you will make more money than you did at plus 130. If the Lakers win in 7, 100 times 3.5 is 350. you lose the unit from the Lakers in six bet, you're up 250 instead of 130. So you decide what you want to do. But these are the mathematical options you have now with all of the exotics. You couldn't bet in series Lakers in six or seven 5 years ago. You bet before the series and that was it. But now at PointsBet and DraftKings and FanDuel and William Hill and BetMGM, you can bet on the series inside the series. And rather than put a unit on plus 130, I think you should bet a unit each, plus 325, plus 350. Is it worth the extra unit to you? Ask yourself that. It'd be worth it to me. Speaking of series prices, I want to dive in a couple more series in the NBA and the NHL. You have to do your damnedest to avoid the overreaction river. And you have to wade through said river. Lakers series price, we've already touched on, but it's worth going through the numbers again. Minus 160 Lakers before game one. Minus 110 before game two. Minus 350 before game three. Minus 900 before game four. And then Monday morning after game four, Lakers plus 105, up to plus 55 by Monday afternoon, and about plus 135, plus 140 right now. The Clippers. Before game one, the Clippers were minus 110. They're down 2-1. They're on the road in Dallas. Minus 110. They win game four handily. Clippers now minus 400. How about the Avalanche? I took a lot of shit on this on Twitter on Saturday. I tweeted out Avalanche minus 180 to win the series against the Knights. I said I made the series minus 250. Avalanche are loaded. They're going to win that series in five or six, I think. So if that's my math, my series price is higher, and that's when you strike. If you make a series 170 and the market is 165, that's probably a no bet, or it should be a no bet. But that's what I do. I make prices. I'll write out markets and lines before the series even pops. And the number I wrote next to Colorado against Vegas was minus 250. That's for a couple different reasons. You have all that Vegas local money that's going to come in and bet the Knights in Vegas. And then you have on top of that all of the sharp money that's going to bet the right team at what they think is the right price. Wow, Knights plus 160. Oh, I like the Knights. It's amazing how that happens. Do you like the Knights to win the series? No. Do you like the Knights at plus 180? Yeah. I get lost in it too. We all do. It's impossible to avoid falling into the trap of the price. But the Avalanche, before game one, were minus 180 on the open, up to $2 by puck drop, and now you can find the Avalanche at minus 400. I don't know. 180 is expensive. It's $4 now. And the Bruins prices. Here we go. Bruins, minus 200 before game one. Minus 500 before game two. And heading into game three, right back where we started. Bruins, minus 200. Which, comparatively speaking, is pretty cheap compared to the minus 500 heading into game number two. Now, I'm going to think long and hard about it before I fire. I think the better number is the Bruins in game number three at minus 130, minus 132 at bookmaker. I think I'd rather go there than lay $2, but relatively speaking, minus 200 on the Bruins is very cheap compared to where it was at minus 500. The Islanders got a lot of calls in that game. It happens in hockey. But the Islanders, three of their goals were very, very strange, very uncharacteristic giveaways by the Bruins. Lauzon fires a puck off his own teammate's skate. It squirts away to a Islander player, wide open, no defense, bang. The other two goals were off Bruins players. Can the Islanders win four games getting breaks like that? I don't think so. But it's always worth remembering where the market is, where it was, and where it could go. If the Bruins win game three, we're back to Bruins minus 500. Let's stick inside the Northeast here where I'm located, Massachusetts. Legal Sports Handle with the story over the weekend. Massachusetts sports betting once again left out of the Senate budget. Opening line from the story. It looks like the path to legal Massachusetts sports betting will again have to come through standalone legislation. The Senate did not include sports betting revenue in its budget proposal despite multiple amendments trying to add it. The House also excluded sports betting from its proposal. Now, sports betting still has a chance this year. Legislative session runs through January 4th, 2022, but I don't know that it's going to happen in the standalone. We've talked about this on Chicken Dinner. Illinois crammed sports betting into a vertical capital bill. It was a part, or a fraction rather, of a much larger bill. Illinois didn't pass the sports betting bill. It was a part of a bigger bill. And it looks like all of these amendments are getting rejected en masse. There are plenty of bills filed, but there's been very little action or skin. And it looks like heading into the Super Bowl, the next Super Bowl for that matter, 22, of the five border states around Massachusetts, four are either live or will be live for that Super Bowl this coming February. Connecticut just had it approved by the state, and it's waiting federal approval. New Hampshire, already live. New York, probably going to be up and running. Rhode Island, they're legal. They've been legal since last summer. So time is ticking here. When I signed my contract in December of 2021, we were fully prepared to have the bill signed by June or July of 2021. Now, it's okay. Nothing's going to happen. I'm just a little flabbergasted at the fact that all of these states are joining the party. We're close to 30 states that are putting pen to paper. And the money it brings in, and the jobs, and the revenue. And Massachusetts and its senators and state reps are like, eh, whatever. It's a Brinks truck. It's not as much as marijuana, but it's still money that you're already missing out on because people, oh, by the way, are gambling anyways. I have coworkers that I work with that drive to New Hampshire or drive to Rhode Island to make a bet. That money is literally going to a different state. I don't like it. It doesn't make sense. But that's where we're at in Massachusetts. You look in other places around the country. David Purdom had a great story. You should check this out on ESPN Chalk. 76ers and Wizards play their first game at a venue with a legal sports book. That was the first NBA game that was played in a venue with a legal book. That was on Saturday, Capital One Arena. First game at a U.S. venue where a legal bookmaker was accepting bets. Adam Silver was there, the commissioner. 76ers owner Josh Harris was there. Fans and bettors arrived at the arena sportsbook early in the afternoon, Purdom wrote, to watch and bet on the Champions League final between Man City and Chelsea. At halftime of Sixers-Wizards, ticket holders left their seats, walked into the sportsbook to place their bets, and customers stayed long after the game ended to watch the final playoff tilt of the night between the Jazz and the Grizzlies. By the time it was all over, the Capital One Arena Sportsbook had handled more money than it had in any day in a long, long time, according to a William Hill executive. How about that? That's the future. And I know a lot of you are listening in Chicago or Chicagoland. This is the blueprint. This is what they want at the United Center. There's a walled-off section that you can't see that is two stories that is ready to rock and ready to roll. They want to make the United Center a destination. Not just for you to roll in there 30 minutes before tip-off of a Bulls game or 30 minutes before puck drop of a hockey game for the Blackhawks. They want you in there. If the game starts at 7, they want you there at 4. And on the weekends, they're going to make a fucking killing. If the Bulls play the Pacers at 7 o'clock on a Saturday, what time do you think that sportsbook's going to open up? 8 in the morning, 9 in the morning. Because guess what? College football starts at 11. You make a day out of it now. And if you've been to the United Center in the last couple of years, they have slowly transformed it from just game day activities, like come in, hand us your ticket, and go into the arena. There are restaurants, there are bars, there are coffee shops. There's all kinds of stuff on campus now that they didn't have because they are planning to turn this into a destination, not just for the game, but for any games. You want to gamble, come to the United Center. Rent a table, get a booth. This is the way of the future. And this is a pretty good blueprint that they have so far at Capital One Arena. Lastly, another huge golf hit over the weekend. Phil Mickelson at the PGA was 300-1. That was his ceiling in the future pool. Jason Kokrak was 50-1 or higher to win the Charles Schwab Challenge this past weekend. Somebody at MGM bet $2,000, two stacks, on Kokrak at 50-1. Whew. I wish I would think of these guys. Why do I never wake up with an inkling on which golf better to hit at 50 or 100 or 200-1? I'm always betting on John Rahm at 12-1, and he always gags. My buddy Matt Humans in Vegas, he bet Ricky Fowler in every major for like a decade. Why don't I wake up and think, Jason Kokrak? That bettor who put down $2,000 won $100,000. That's Chicken Dinner. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, he is the host of New York, New York on The Ringer and Spotify. John Jastrzemski at John_Jastrzemski, fresh off the Memorial Day weekend. Buddy, how you doing?
Sammy, it's always great being back on Chicken Dinner, bro. All is good. It was kind of a miserable Memorial Day weekend. I don't know if you were dealing with the same sort of crap up in Boston, but I mean, it was like 48 and rainy here in the New York area. So, you know, you make do, you pound a couple of drinks, you bet on a couple of games, and you know, the brighter days are ahead. I mean, that's the only hope. Brighter days are ahead.
Well, after the Knicks are pretty much dead and the Yankees are 1-6 in their last seven, I hope it was more than a couple of drinks.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was the bourbon, dude. I don't even think the beer was getting me through this weekend. And, you know, I have to admit, I did Sunday's pod fresh off the Knick loss to the Hawks and after the Yankees got swept by the lowly Detroit Tigers. And, you know, somebody had texted me and they had said, JJ, you seem a lot more angry when it comes to the Yankees as opposed to the Knicks. And I said, yeah, I think there's a method to my madness. The Knicks have squeezed every last ounce out of them for this year. You know, they're losing to a more talented team. They're losing to a better team. I can accept that. You know, I can go to sleep at night thinking about that. The Yankees, Sam, and what I'm seeing out of them, dude, what a flop, man. Bro, I feel like we could put me and you in the lineup and we might generate more offense than what they got going. I mean, it is pathetic.
So for those that don't know, you are the recent hire, tremendous host at The Ringer and Spotify. You're under the Bill Simmons tree now. Are you learning? Is it better when the teams lose? Is it better for the shows? Is it better for the content? Am I getting at something here?
Normally you are in a sports radio sense, but here's the bottom line, Sam. You want the teams to lose and be interesting. It gets to a point where apathy kicks in, though. And I've seen that with the New York football team. Listen, they've been all sorts of dysfunctional. They've done all sorts of losing the last few years, right? But when you're 4-8 in December, what good does that do you? You know what I mean, dude? Like, you want the team to be relevant. You want the team to have buzz. So I can tell you point blank, our numbers with the Knicks being good and with the Knicks being in the playoffs have been off the charts because there's a real interest. There's a real hunger for it. I think the Yankees going through a rut, it makes it interesting, dude. But the Yankees are turning a whole lot of people off. And if this is the product you're going to get, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, well, great. Even if they turn it around, wake me up when the playoffs roll around. And I guess that's what can happen when you've been knocking at the door for the last 5 years, give or take. You know, a lot of people are going to say, wake me up when the playoffs rolls around. But that's the danger, if you will, about that old sports radio narrative where, quote unquote, negativity sells.
How much do you miss being on JJ After Dark till 4 or 5 in the morning?
You know, Sammy, I got to be honest, dude, not at all. Not at all. I'll tell you what I miss, in all seriousness. I miss my regulars, you know, the guys who were with me every step along the way from when I started in 2011. But, you know, the amazing thing about this new platform is I did a locker room show in which we incorporated live calls after game 2 of the Hawks series, after game 3 of the Hawks series. And you would not believe the old school WFAN callers that were making their way to locker room. They download a locker room so they have the opportunity to talk to me. And I'm not talking about, you know, the 20 to 25-year-old millennial who has that stuff at the palm of their fingertips. I'm talking about the old school, true blue, late night JJ After Dark caller. So, listen, it was a great run there, dude. It's where I got my start. I'm always going to have a place near and dear in my heart for what I did over those 9 years. But, I mean, as far as the new gig, it's been, you know, better hours, better lifestyle, Bill backing me, all sorts of support. Bro, no complaints.
I think the executives are finally realizing that it's not about the platform, it's about the person. They're going to follow the guys or the girls now that make you interested in listening. You know, it's one thing, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe, 5 years ago. All right, got to turn on the fan after the Yankees game. Got to turn on the fan after the Knick game. They're turning on people they want to hear now, and I think that's the difference. And then you weave in this gambling angle. Simmons is all in on gambling. I mean, that guy's been writing about gambling since he started Page 2. So I think you just hit the nuts, man, and I'm so happy for you.
Well, I appreciate that, bro. And listen, you got to give them a reason to come to your platform. And when you're starting something new, Sammy, like I am, and I understand I'm getting incredible backing, and you're so right about Simmons. He's been ahead of the curve when it comes to gambling, when it comes to podcasting, when it comes to audio, video content. I mean, the guy just flat out gets it. I'm not just trying to kiss his ass because I work for him. That's just the God's honest truth, and the proof is in the pudding. But yeah, dude, I think from a talent standpoint, you got to bring the heat, you know, and it's not that you got to be fake, and it's not that you got to be over the top, but you need to provide people a reason to want to hear you, to want to, you know, come and hang out after a big win and after a bad loss. And I think that, like, on-demand availability is huge, dude. Like, I'll give you an example. Wednesday and Friday are, quote-unquote, supposed to be my off days, but they're Knick playoff games. I'll fire up the locker room and do a half hour. Why the hell not, man? Like, that's what the audience is counting on me for. So I'm glad that, you know, people are receptive into saying, all right, this is where I can find content. It's not that I have to go to one singular entity and maybe wait an hour and a half for so-and-so to come on. As soon as that game ends, as soon as that bad boy's over, fire it up and let's go.
No longer JJ After Dark. He is JJ a la carte joining us on Chicken Dinner. All right, let's gamble because that's what we're here to do. I am so enamored by this number on Zach Wilson for touchdown passes this coming season. Now, assuming he's going to start out of the chute, I don't know. I don't think Testaverde is still available for the Jets. It's got to be Wilson. 20.5, the number on the touchdown passes. Where do we start with that number?
Wow. Wow. I mean, first glance, Sammy, I love the over. That's what I'm thinking first glance. I mean, you're basically betting on and you're banking on two things here. One, is he going to play close to 16 games? My money would be on yes. The other thing you're betting on is what kind of offense are the Jets going to run inside the 10-yard line? Are they going to have the sort of offense where if they get inside the 5, they're just pounding it and running it like crazy? That's where the touchdown number could get dicey. But, dude, you figure if he plays, you know, 17 games, you add an extra game this year. So throw that on top of any of these prop numbers that are out there. Dude, I think we got a family player right out of the gate. I'll go over Zach Wilson touchdowns. Let's go.
I don't know why his number is – well, you have to make Lawrence's number a little bit higher. We know that. I mean, if you're sitting in the trade room and you're going to make Wilson 20.5, just by nature you have to make Lawrence that much higher. But who is Trevor Lawrence throwing to? Who, fucking Tebow? His number's 22.5. The line stinks. His receivers stink. I think I like Wilson's over more than Lawrence's number, and it's not like I'm trying to make a hot take. I think the Jets have better weapons.
You're not wrong on that. I mean, that's what you're talking about with Jacksonville, though. Now, Lawrence is a better quarterback, though. So I think you know this. When you're putting these prop totals together, Lawrence is the Heisman Trophy winner at some point, or not a championship winner. I mean, he should have won a Heisman, it feels like. He didn't. It's crazy thinking about Trevor Lawrence's college career and, you know, outdueling Tua and having that great game a couple of years ago against Ohio State. You, like, automatically, like, link him. You're like, yeah, title winner, Heisman winner. And I'm like, yeah, oh, shit, he didn't win a Heisman. It feels like he did. But regardless, he is the more accomplished, I guess you would say, quarterback prospect of the two. The schedule is tough, though. I mean, that AFC South, you look at Tennessee, those are a couple of tough games. Indianapolis has a tough defense. The only problem is, if you're going under, Sammy, on the Lawrence touchdown prop, Lawrence might throw 6 or 7 against that pathetic Texan team. So, might have to take that into account when we're factoring in these numbers. You know, how bad are the Texans going to be? My goodness.
I just don't know when they clear Deshaun Watson. I think he can't miss the whole season. And that's where I'm sort of torn, because if they say, all right, you can come back in October, they can win 4 games, 5 games. But you're right. I mean, everything else is barren there because that organization is a freaking mess. I've got this number that's really interesting here on the New York Giants. And I'm not trying to say they're going to make the playoffs, but that division is more wide open than I think it's ever been. And I'm very curious to see how Dak Prescott plays, you know, 6-8 months after he shattered his leg. I don't know how that's going to go. The G-men to make the playoffs, plus 250 or plus 270. Are you interested?
I'm intrigued by that number because of everything you just said. I think the NFC East is the coin flip division. Call me crazy on this, Sammy. I think the artist formerly known as the Washington Redskins, a.k.a. the Washington football team, I think the football team is the team to beat in the division. Oh. I like the idea that they dude, I can't believe I'm saying it. They brought in the bearded wonder, Ryan Fitzpatrick. They got a legitimate pass rush. I don't believe in Dallas at all. I think Dallas is way too top-heavy a team. I don't like McCarthy. I don't like their defense. But from a value standpoint, Sam, to get back to your question, 270, Giants to make the playoffs, that's not a bad bet, bro. That's not a bad bet at all. Now, do you like that better than the Giants to win the division flat out?
Yes, I do, I think. I don't know. I'm looking at this football team number to make the playoffs. This number, now, we talk about numbers, and it's so funny how guys like you and me, we can pick winners and we can handicap, but sometimes we get lost in the number. Like the football team to make the playoffs plus 160. They have a better chance. The numbers say they have a better chance to make the playoffs. But I look at that number, plus 150, plus 160 to make the playoffs, and I go, eh, too low. I'm talking
myself
out of it.
Yeah, there's no value. No, there's no value. I mean, I don't blame you on that. I mean, I'm not taking plus 150, 160 in a division that's wide open. I want more. I want more bang for my buck. You know what I mean, dude? And I would say you're going to get more bang for your buck with the Giants. The issue with the Giants is going to be this, the quarterback. They've improved this offseason. They're going to be more dynamic from a weapon standpoint. Can Daniel Jones play? And I got to be honest, Sam, 2 years into his career, I don't know the answer to that question. And I think that's what you're betting on with that number. Can Daniel Jones take his game to the next level? I know some folks around here are hoping he can make a Josh Allen type of leap. I'm telling you right now, that ain't happening. He don't have to make a Josh Allen leap, though. If he can just be a top 15 quarterback in the sport, I think the Giants are a playoff team this year.
I do love the way the football team has drafted, though. The last 5 years, they've gone with a defensive player in round number one. And let's go a year before this past draft, they went in a row. Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen. They built the best defensive line in football 4 years straight in the draft.
You're right. And that's building from within. I talk about it all the time. Offensive linemen, defensive linemen. And, dude, they're going to be a pain in the neck to block this year. Like, I think about Montez Sweat and Chase Young chasing down Daniel Jones in the two Washington Giant matchups. That's scary, dude. Like, that is not something I'm looking forward to if I'm a Giant fan. And I don't know if you got this sense watching them last year. It was all about their quarterback play. If they got any sort of quarterback play, they were in a whole lot of games. I mean, think about their game against Tampa Bay went on to win the Super Bowl. You could make the argument, Sammy, Washington, even with Taylor Heineke at quarterback, gave them the best run for their money in any game that they play in the postseason. I know that's going to bother the Packer fan, but let's be honest. The Packers were down 14, 17 points before storming back in the second half of that game. So I think Washington could play, dude. I really do.
I'm thinking about those Washington, New York Giant totals. 43.5?
Oh, we're pounding unders. We're pounding unders in those games. I mean, let's make a mental note of that so that way we're ready for whenever I don't have the schedule in front of me. Whenever Washington plays the Giants, those are going to be some ugly, rock'em, sock'em, old-school type of football games, dude. I don't think there's any doubt.
I want to spend the last couple of minutes here talking about baseball, and then I actually have a LeBron question in there too. But I love when division races are tight in May and June, and they stay tight. And I think we've got two tremendous divisions this year. National League West, you've got three teams separated by two games, San Fran, San Diego, Los Angeles, all within two games. And then the division in your backyard and now my backyard, Tampa 35-20, Boston 32-21, Yankees 29-25. I think it's impossible right now to predict correctly which team wins both of those divisions. Those divisions are going to be fucking wars.
I would agree with that. Now, the two teams that to me are playing above their means and are playing a little over their head, San Francisco is one in the National League. I can't believe San Francisco is doing this with the Dodgers and with the Padres in the same division. So that's one. So I don't think San Francisco wins the division in the American League East. I can't believe the Red Sox are doing this, dude. Now, it gets to a point where you got to say it's somewhat sustainable. I'm down on the Yankees, quite frankly. I don't think they can hit. I think that's their biggest problem. It's amazing, Sam. Everyone thought going into the year, the Yankees are going to score a ton of runs and their pitching is going to be weak. It's been the exact opposite. The Yankee pitching has been fabulous from Cole to Montgomery to Domingo Germán. I know Kluber's out, but he was great when he was pitching. They're getting Severino back. Yankee pitching and their bullpen is good. I don't know if this team is going to score runs. And you keep waiting for the market to correct itself. You know, this dead ball year, the batting averages are way down. So I know some people are saying, oh, when it warms up, when it heats up, teams and, you know, offenses are going to get going. I don't know if the Yankee offense is going to get going. So if they don't get a bat or two, I don't like them to win this division. Sam, you know who I like to win this division? Tampa. Because you know what, dude? They're resourceful. They find a way to do more with less. They're always in it. And I thought the odds makers kind of slapped them in the face a little bit with the low win total going back to the beginning of the year. I was all over Tampa. I think it was like 85.5 wins. And here on June the 1st, if I had to pick a team to win the AL East, I think it's the Tampa Bay Rays.
You heard it. Tampa Bay right now at DraftKings plus 225. Yankees still favored plus 135. Red Sox 3-1. Blue Jays 7-1. Baltimore Orioles, JJ, only 800-1 right now.
Maybe we take a flyer. Just
no,
kidding. Just kidding.
No,
I like
maybe
money.
We don't.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I want to get your reaction out of that. I wanted to see. You know, I'm all for rolling the dice, Sam, but I don't like a lottery ticket that has no chance of cashing. That's a lottery ticket, my friend, that has zero chance of cashing.
My last question involves the Lakers and LeBron, and we talked about this for quite a bit, you know, in the opening of the show. It's taken a lot for me to restrain myself on jumping back into the pool on the Lakers series. We know LeBron has never lost in the first round, 14-0. I jumped in after game one, took Lakers minus 10. Now I can get Lakers plus 40, and I'm almost positive Anthony Davis is going to be out for game 5 and maybe game 6, but I'm still being gravitationally pulled toward LeBron at plus money, even though I know it's probably a loser. I can't help myself, buddy.
I understand that. And listen, I can't stand LeBron James. I can't stand the Los Angeles Lakers. That said, I took them after game 1. I'm invested in their series price. The question is, do I double down? And after this conversation, Sam, yeah, I think I'm going to let the head talk and not the heart. And if they lose, I'll be happy to see LeBron out of the playoffs for the first time ever. So, yeah, I mean, listen, anytime you see LeBron plus money and the series is tied 2-2, that's making me an offer I can't refuse, dude.
You just watch the games, though, and it's like, all right, it's LeBron, it's Marc Gasol, Dennis Schroeder, the white guy with the headband, and some other bum.
Caruso.
And you're like,
listen, they're not great.
How is it this bad?
Well, they miss Davis, dude. That's the thing. It's obvious. They're a different team when Davis is on the floor. When Davis is on the floor, he's unstoppable, and they have no answer for him. But, dude, if he's not right, Lakers are not winning an NBA title. I'm telling you. And the team everybody's sleeping on, they're not sexy, they're not pretty. Utah, Sam, is legit. I'm invested in them at 10-1 to win the title. And I know it's Utah. So a lot of people are going to say, oh, it ain't going to happen. They don't have the star power. Gobert, Mitchell, ton of three-point shooting. They can get out of the Western Conference.
He's the host of New York, New York on The Ringer and Spotify. Go follow our guy, John Jastrzemski, at John_Jastrzemski. The man's taken over, and he's doing it day by day and step by step. I appreciate you being flexible, pal. I know we'll talk again soon one way or the other, and maybe we'll see you at Fenway later on this summer.
You will see me. Middle of July, Sammy. So I hope that the Sam Hazy Lager is waiting for me. All right, bro?
You got it, pal. See you soon.
Thanks, Sammy.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to John Jastrzemski for hopping on the program. Record check 133, 124, and 5. We are down one unit. That's it. One unit. Got a couple pendings here. Lakers series minus 10. Clippers series minus 10. Avs series minus 180. And the big ticket that I am paying very close attention to, Boston Bruins to win the Stanley Cup. We've got 14 and 18-1. You look at the market, plus 450, 5-1. I like where we're at. I think they get through this series, and then we might get creative. We might start hedging. We'll go from there when the time is right. I do like, Alex Smith likes this too, tomorrow in hockey. This will be on Wednesday night. I love the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow. They're at home against Montreal. Open 15. It's already 22-25. I see a 30, William Hill, a 32 at Pinnacle. This market, I don't know how much higher it gets, but I think the Jets are right. Rested at home. Montreal just had two emotional games in a row to stay alive and win. I think the Jets are a good bet at home in game number one of that hockey series. We will talk to Tone Diggs from the Pat McAfee Show and Hammer Don. He'll join us on Thursday. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you then right here on Chicken Dinner.
Broken dreams held together with so you